Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, my friend. How are you? Welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. I'm Louise McSharry, and this is the podcast where I do my best to keep you caught up on what's going on in the world, whether you are simply too busy to pay attention or simply choose not to. No worries, because I'll get you caught up so that you can get involved in all your friends' conversations over the next week or so. Today is the entertainment episode. We've got lots to talk about, from the Electric Picnic lineup to Drew Barrymore calling Kamala Harris Mamala Harris. There's lots to get into. But before we get started, what do I have to tell you? I have to tell you I went to see Kacey Musgraves last night and it was amazing. I know I've recommended Kacey Musgraves on the podcast before. Her new album is gorgeous and her previous album is also gorgeous. If you're in any way, like, I'm not a massive country music person, even though obviously Dolly Parton is my queen. But Kacey Musgraves' music is very accessible. It's not overly kind of honky-tonk or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just not to my personal taste. I think anyone who likes any kind of music could really get into it. It's just beautiful, simple, storytelling songs, which I personally love. But it was so special, and I was trying to figure out why it was so special, because I've been to a lot of gigs. And I think she just does an amazing job of making it feel very personal. So she spent a lot of time explaining that she had chosen to start her tour for this album in Dublin at the Olympia Theatre intentionally because she'd had such good times there before and because she saw such a connection between Celtic music and the country music, and that she really had taken a lot of inspiration from Celtic music in making the new album. She had an Illan pipes player from Dingle come onto the stage and play as part of one of her songs, which is just absolutely gorgeous. She chatted so easily and, you know, in such a friendly manner, told us funny stories. She'd spent a week in the Aran Islands and she told us stories about that. And she then finished the whole gig with a song that she said no one else had ever heard. It was a brand new song called Irish Goodbye. And she hadn't even played it on the first night. So it just, you know, you just left the gig feeling like you got something really, really, really special. And I think she just has a real talent for that. She also had 8 different musicians on the stage with her. There were 6 keyboards. Like, country music doesn't mess around when it comes to musicianship, and they were all individually brilliant, and like as a group they were incredible. So it was really good. Definitely, if you haven't checked her out, I would go and listen to her album and prepare yourself maybe for the next time she comes around. I'm also very excited because Billie Eilish has announced a world tour. She's going to be doing 2 nights in the 3 Arena. Those tickets go on sale next week, I think. So that's my current obsession. And I'm going to see Olivia Rodrigo tomorrow night. Are you a teenager, Louise? I hear you asking. No. Do I still like music by teenagers? Yes, I do. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing Olivia Rodrigo tomorrow night. I think she's made 2 of the best pop albums. Sorry, I feel like I clicked out there for a second. She's made 2 of the best pop albums of the last number of years, and Billie Eilish obviously is just a phenomenon. So yeah, dying to see her when she comes to Dublin. It's the 26th and 27th of July that she's going to be here. So yeah, can you imagine how competitive it is going to be to try and get those tickets though? It's going to be on taunts. Anywho, let's keep on going. We have got lots to talk about in the entertainment news this week. So let's chat to James O'Hagan. James O'Hagan, I am so thrilled to be speaking to you in such a special moment. James just told me that he just got amazing news. We've been talking about a journey that he's been on. James, mm-hmm. Tell the people about your journey.
I mean, I have been on the journey. I'm sure there are so many people who can relate to this, but the moving home to save journey has finally paid off for me. And I just literally found out 5 minutes before the before we came on to Zoom here that my mortgage has drawn down, that I'm getting my keys tomorrow, and we are going to be moving in. My beautiful partner and I will be moving into our gorgeous new home in and around the Glasnevin area on Thursday of this week. And it is so exciting. I am like beside myself with joy.
Oh, I'm just so happy for you. It's just I asked you if we could share it because I think that it feels so unachievable, I think, for lots of people. And unfortunately for some people it is unachievable.
Yeah.
But, you know, for others it might be encouraging or comforting to know that it does, you
Yeah.
know, sometimes there are happy endings. 'Cause you've been at home for how long?
I've been at home in my parents' house for 4 years at this
Yeah,
point,
it's a long
and
time.
it is a long time. And the last year, my partner and I have been living here, and we've really been focused on the saving. And it hasn't been an easy journey. And I think that anyone who's doing it knows how much sacrifice is involved and sort of how much you kind of have to give up. And also just how sort of unrewarding a lot of it feels and how annoying it feels, because it feels like this should be something that is way more within my reach.
Yeah.
I should be able to buy like a home to live in without having to put myself through nearly, 4 years of turmoil. And I do think that, like, I feel so relieved that I know, like, in essence, the housing crisis ends for me today, but it also exists for so many people. And it is something that I hope that, like, in 4 or 5 years, they've actually dealt with in the government, and like
Yeah.
people don't have to suffer through a year of turning down every single social plan so that Bank of Ireland won't look at your account and be like, "Oh, did you have two coffees that day? I'm sorry, I don't think we can give you a mortgage as a result of that." So,
Yeah.
like, yeah, it is. But no, today we are all just full of joy. Joy, energy, lightness, and happiness,
Exactly.
and
And
a little bit
stay
of
there.
jealousy. A little bit of jealousy, and that's okay too.
Yes, I said to James, I'm very happy for you, but also a little bit jealous. Which for me, that's kind of like the peak thing you can get from me because, you know, I will always be a little bit jealous if you're doing something worthwhile. It's just who I am.
Exactly, and that's perfect.
Well, I mean, I suppose we should get into the stories because you were saying that because you had finally kind of crossed the line with mortgage approval and all the rest, you felt safe enough to make a purchase on Friday after the Electric Picnic lineup announcement came out. And I really want to discuss this because I think it's very interesting what's happened. So for anybody who hasn't been paying attention, what is the story with the lineup for Electric Picnic?
So people are torn now. So there had been, I think it's important to like add into this, that there had been almost since last year when they announced that they were doing it the week earlier, and they kind of, they kind of put the tickets on sale a week before the last one. So there has been this rumbling under thing of like, "Oh, Electric Picnic next year." There's been getting a lot of the vibes have been negative around it, I would say. And there's been a lot of tumultuous kind of online speculation about whether or not it was even going to go ahead. So last week on Friday, they announced the first 50 acts that were going to be sort of head or taking to the stage across the weekend in Stradbally, a week earlier than they normally do for their 20th anniversary. And the headliners are Noah Kahan, Jerry Cinnamon, Calvin Harris, Codaline, Kylie, and Ray. But there have been, I would say, like, within queer Twitter slash social media, there has been nothing but absolute like meltdowns of joy. But within the non-queer spaces, people are really going in on this lineup and saying that it is completely unspectacular, that it is totally underwhelming, that it's a waste of money, that it's super lackluster. I had a look at a poll the Journal did, which said that 43% of people said that this lineup is either bad or very bad. And apparently tickets, some people are reselling tickets. One person said in a comment that I saw, I can't, I think it was on the Journal, that Kylie couldn't even sell out the Vicar Street. And I was like, excuse me, take a seat.
Like, so for me, the Kylie thing is the really interesting point because, as you just told me, you guys decided that you were going to take some money out of
Spur of
your
the moment.
savings and splurge because you couldn't miss Kylie. And I actually thought it was sold out. So how did you did you get a resale ticket?
Oh, I think obviously some disgruntled heterosexual decided to like put their tickets back up on sale, and me and Diego leapt at
Okay, got it. Because this is what I was thinking. What I was thinking when I saw the lineup was I saw loads of my queer friends and obviously some straight pop princesses and stuff really just so thrilled to see Kylie in the lineup, but also, you know, tortured because the Electric Picnic crowd who would have bought tickets last year, kind of, you know, ahead of any kind of announcement or suggestion, is not necessarily the Kylie crowd. And the Kylie crowd, I saw a lot of people being like, but we can't go now. So now we're, Kylie's fan base is losing the opportunity, ostensibly, to go and see her. Yeah. Unless, it's, you know, they do something like what you did. And the Electric Picnic fan base won't even be the people who would fully appreciate a Kylie show. Like, I felt kind of aggrieved, I have to say, on a personal level.
And this is one of those things about, like, about festivals announcing their lineups kind of like after tickets have sold out, is because, like, you don't know what the headline is going to be or what. And now I do have to say, stepping back from it, like, I have a decades long relationship with festival going, and I understand that in reality the lineup makes very little difference to your enjoyment of the festival. Yeah. It's all about vibes. It's who you're there with. You know, you can, like, and you know, I have seen a lot of people comparing this lineup to, say, the one back in 2010 or 2011, being like, oh my god, look at all these, like, amazing bands that made up the lineup, right down to, like, the sort of small, like, fifth box down. But it's not fair to compare those lineups, where those bands were just starting off and no one knew who they were, to now, where, you know, 10-15 years now, maybe, you know, New Dad or Brick Nasty will be like the main headliner, and everyone will be like, oh, that's amazing.
They're actually both great bands. I really like New Dad and Brick Nasty.
Well, there you go. I literally just read them off the thing that I have here in front of me. But no, I do think that, you know, you do take a punt when you buy a ticket ahead of time without seeing the lineup, that it may not be to your taste. But I would have said that this array of headliners kind of has something for everyone in it.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't see why there's so much kind of, you know, anti, so much aggression about it. And particularly the fact that Kylie is an icon.
Yeah.
She is on the same level as Madonna, as Cher. She is in that bracket that no matter who you are, you know Kylie songs. No matter who you are going to enjoy singing and dancing to Kylie songs. So I kind of, it feels homophobic to me.
Well, yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that. I think, you know, the issue is, it's not just that, you know, bands have had time to develop. It's also that there's so many more festivals now. Like, it's so much more competitive now for festivals to book acts than it used to be. I mean, even just if you think about just Ireland, like, when I was started going to Electric Picnic, there was Electric Picnic and there was Oxygen, and that was it.
And that was it.
You know what I mean? Now there's like 25 festivals in Ireland across the summer, and they're all competing against each other. Like, that's just the reality of it. So it's much more difficult now to kind of get the kind of lineup that you used to get for Electric Picnic or for Oxygen back in the day.
100%. I have one person, of course, who, and this, every time I see Kylie, I'm reminded, just one person, of course, who will be delighted is former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. He will no doubt be sending another letter in. Dear Kylie, I would like to officially and formally welcome you to Stradbally. One of my favourite stories about our former leader.
People slag him off for that. I'm like, fair play. I'd be the same.
Absolutely.
Like, if Dolly Parton, if I was a Taoiseach and Dolly Parton came to Ireland, I'd be all over.
100%. But one thing I know that with the lineup for Electric Picnic is often heavily kind of similar, very similar to the Leeds Reading lineup. So I had a look over there to see kind of who's on those who's on that lineup that isn't on the Electric Picnic one. I have to say Two Door Cinema Club are bands that are, like, reliable for, like, a good set and a good dance. Mm-hmm. And Renee Rapp is there, and I would love if they added her to the Electric Picnic lineup as well. We will see. There's obviously another 40 acts or so to still be added over the course of the weekend. And I think for those people who are complaining, you know, have a seat. Sometimes you can just enjoy something, you know?
Well, I also think what your point is so true, that, like, you know, festival lineup obviously is important. I'm not suggesting that it's not important.
Yeah.
However, you know, the fun that you have is based on so much more than the 100%. Acts themselves. But anyway, I don't know what I'm going to do, because if I just, the idea of not seeing Kylie, I'm not currently going to Electric Picnic, and the idea of not seeing Kylie is very difficult for me to stomach. Also, Kylie and Ray, like, Ray is incredible. The two of them on the same lineup. If Peggy Goo was on that night as well, I'd be well up for a little jaunt down on the Sunday. So we'll see.
Listen, you just need to put the vibes out. Minefield podcast tent. Minefield podcast.
Are
you looking for a lineup?
I'm available. They have never booked me. And, you know, I'm starting to take it personally. I'm not going to lie. Okay, let's move on. Honestly, though, why will they not book me? Like, I have such a loyal listenership.
They're afraid that you will show up the other podcasts there. That's obviously what it is.
No, I doubt it. I mean, in fairness, podcasting in Ireland is pretty competitive sector these days. Okay, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about Rainy Babe Deer. No, Baby Rainy Reindeer. Baby Reindeer, obviously, absolutely massive Netflix series. And there's been a lot of chat about it over the last couple of weeks. I actually have chosen not to watch Baby Reindeer. Something about it just gave me the ick. And I think it's partially because it's about a stalker, and partially because the stalker is a plus size woman, and I learned that the woman in real life is not plus size, and it felt to me kind of icky to like, I just feel so often fat people's bodies are used to kind of illustrate like a distasteful character in TV and film. And that may not be what's happening here, because as I say, I haven't watched it, but it just kind of gave me the ick. So I was like, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, now I have to say I had a similar feeling about it, and I had not watched it until I saw those on the stories for today, and I was like, look, I'm just going to watch the first episode of it so I have a bit more of a well-rounded kind of idea of what this whole thing is about, because obviously I'd seen the conversation online, I'd seen a lot of the kind of, you know, the story online, I was really interested in it, but I had seen that sort of, you know, the individual at the heart of this wasn't a plus-size person and they had chosen to cast a plus-size actress. Now, having watched the first couple of episodes, my mind is blown. It is one of the best pieces of television I have ever watched. And the actor, I think her name is Jessica Gunning. I could be wrong on that. The actress who plays Martha, the stalker in the show, is phenomenal. Like, she is, I'm going to say, a future Nicola Coughlan. There you go, I've said it. Like, she is her performance is absolutely outstanding in the show. But for anyone who's been living under a rock, obviously Baby Reindeer is inspired by a real life true story from comedian Richard Gadd, where he experienced kind of months and months of stalking by a woman he had met when he was working in a pub in London at a particularly hard time in his life. The show is interesting in that kind of, obviously, usually with stalking content or with stalking stories around stalking, there's a very clear divide of who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. Watching this, you very quickly understand that actually it's not quite as black and white as you would think it is. And that sort of, you know, that he owns up to ways in which perhaps he played into this or he enjoyed the attention that he was getting. And so it's a very interesting show and a very different perspective on this kind of topic. The woman at the center of it has sort of now, I suppose, essentially, like Richard Gadd said, don't speculate about who these people are in real life. Don't look for these people in real life. This is a story presented with you as, even though it is a true story, I'm presenting it to you as like a complete sort of work. You don't need to know who these people are, but internet sleuths be internet sleuths. They're all off looking for this woman. They want to find her. Obviously, this woman is, you know, is vulnerable, to put it mildly. And now that she's been identified, she sort of has come out and sort of given out about Richard Gadd exploiting her for fame and fortune, saying he's using Baby Reindeer to stalk me now. I'm the victim. He's written a bloody show about me. And so, but she also says that she's been getting death threats and attacked on social media. And, you know, that is a dangerous thing about taking a story like this. Like, you know, Richard Gadd was naive if he felt he could just say, don't go look for this woman who I am painting out to be the most, like, insane individual you literally have ever seen in your entire life and try to find her in real life, and that the fans would actually respect that. But it is, I cannot speak more highly of it. I'm four episodes in. Last night I intended to watch like the first one just to get an idea. Four episodes later I was like, I need to turn this off now before I watch all eight.
Okay. I don't know what it is. And the thing is, like, even when, you know, when you're talking about it, I feel conflicted, because I'm also like, obviously I'm so glad that this actor got this amazing opportunity and that she's getting this moment, you know, to shine, because fat actors don't get that many opportunities, unfortunately, because not that many roles are written for them. But, you know, I think it's the real life aspect of it, or just like, I you know, you see it in books as well. I remember I was reading a book, I'm not going to say who wrote the book, but it was someone I really admire who'd written a book, and I was reading it, and there was a character who came in who was this like horrible man. And it, one of the main ways that this writer chose to illustrate that this man was horrible was that was describing in great detail his large body. And I just was like, it's so lazy and it's so shitty and it's just fat phobic through and through. And I'm very, I guess I'm just very sensitive to that. So
I have to say, I do find that the use of weight as shorthand for a portrayal of negativity is so across the board. And it is, and I am conflicted on it as well, because initially when I'd watched, when I had seen the sort of the, when I'd been sort of seeing conversation around this, I just found it gross that here, like here they are kind of again using essentially like a person's body type in order to portray that this is the evil person, we don't like this person. And you are right, like I mean every book you read where there's a bad guy, it's usually that they're described as, you know, being larger, and it's really, really depressing, because then that's how people start to see it, and that leads to like bullying and all the rest of it. But I don't know, now that I've watched it, I'm sucked into the baby reindeerosphere, and I'm I don't think I'm getting out of it.
I've seen because there's an Instagram account I follow called Fat in Film, which is just literally fat people who get to be in movies and TV, and it's like an applause of this, by the way. It's obviously a positive thing, a celebration of fatness in film and TV is the bio, and they posted her the other day, but the person who posted it said, I actually haven't seen it yet, so please do let me know if there is fat phobia in there, because obviously I wouldn't be celebrating that. And the comments are really interesting because, you know, lots of people are saying, no fat phobia, like it's all good. And I don't think it is necessarily fat phobic within the script or like within the actual, you know, series. But then there are a few people saying that they think that her being cast in the first place is kind of inherently fat phobic. It's that conversation. Yeah. I mean, look, it's so complicated. And again, I don't want to shit on Jessica Gunning for getting a brilliant role and doing a brilliant job, because I'm delighted for her that she did. I'm just exceptionally sensitive at the moment to this kind of stuff, so I'm trying to protect myself.
And I do have to say as well, I've seen a couple of interviews with Richard Gadd where he has been speaking about Jessica Gunning, and the way he talks about her, like he was on, I think it was like Good Morning Britain, the nice one with Pat Dealey.
Yeah, and he said that
Jessica Gunning is the best actress that's come out of the UK in the last like 30 years, that she is the best actress that he has like ever kind of worked alongside, and that he had pinned her for this role way before he even kind of got a Netflix idea. So there is, I think it's sort of a case of, here is someone who really admires someone and wants them to do well and has given them an amazing script and a platform to do well.
Yeah.
But that phobia is so real and exists so completely around us in the society we're living in that it's just impossible to ignore the fact that, again, this trope of the evil, the kind of Kathy Bates and Misery trope of like, here's a plus size person. Again, the only way they can get love is if they're,
Yeah, but that makes me feel really bad now that I've even said it, because I feel like, well, it's so unfair to her to suggest that would be a factor when, you know, it sounds like she did absolutely just get the role based on merit and talent. So look, I don't know, this is what it's like being out here in a body that people hate for no reason. Okay, anyway, look, well done her. I'm happy for her one way or the other. I always want people like me to succeed.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes. Okay, let's move on. The Ivor Novello nominations came out this week, and actually loads of Irish stuff in there.
Yeah, so three acts have been nominated across the Ivor Novellos, including C-Mat Lancome and Jazzy. C-Mat's been nominated for Best Album for Crazy Mad For Me. Lancome have been nominated for the same category for False Lancome, which actually won the Choice Prize last year. And Jazzy has been nominated for Most Performed Work for her song Giving Me, which garnered 137 million streams on Spotify alone. And I honestly would have thought that it was about several billion, the amount of times I've heard that song.
Yeah.
I think it is fantastic, and it is such, I think that our Irish culture in general is having a moment. If we look back to our performance at the in the film world, and now we look into the music, it's really great. Because I know we'll talk about a story in a few minutes where Irish culture has been sort of yet again Britified, but for this moment, let's just enjoy how wonderful it is. Though I think for C-Mat, I would imagine that becoming a friend of the pod on Who Weekly is probably a greater a greater endorsement.
Yeah.
than Ivor, but it is just wonderful to see these artists nominated, and that Crazy Mad For Me album is,
it's like brilliant.
every single one of those songs will be in my Spotify Wrapped at the end of the year. I can absolutely say Jazzy is fantastic. Lancome, I'm not much for Irish folk music, but I understand that they are phenomenal as well.
They are, yeah, no, they're brilliant. I love Lancome. I think they're absolutely incredible, and I what I think is really good is the diversity within these three acts. Like,
yes,
you know, C-Mat is kind of country pop, you've got Lancome who are traditional Irish music, and then you have Jazzy who's doing like electro kind of dance pop. I don't know, what would you call that genre? And it just, I think, is a really good demonstration of just how diverse the Irish music industry is now, that like, it wasn't that long ago that it was all just guys with guitars, and that's not the case anymore. And I for one love to see it.
No, absolutely. It is that actually something I hadn't even picked up on until you said it, but yeah, it's great to see this diversity, and like to see it kind of, like, you know, even the way Lancome is doing what they're doing is not necessarily what you would necessarily expect from kind of like from an Irish folk group. So to see that like diversity and showing like all the ways in which we can create art and culture is spectacular.
Yeah.
And I hope once again, like earlier this year when we did so well during the during the kind of award season around the film world, you just hope that someone in the Arts Council is watching this and understanding we need to start funding people to create this kind of work, because when Irish people do culture, they do it some of the best in the entire world, and we need to start respecting the fact that this is like a way that people need to be able to make a living, and just actually, I suppose, empowering them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just in case anybody doesn't know, the Ivor Novello are songwriting awards, very prestigious. They would be kind of dreamed of by a lot of musicians when they're preparing their work. And C-Mat tweeted, "Anyone who has ever met me past the age of 15 will know that it has always been my dream to win an Ivor Novello award. To be nominated for Best Album amongst a group of artists whose music I've worshipped is truly the biggest honor of my career so far. Thank you so much." So a big, I mean, Jesus, what the last 18 months for C-Mat has just been,
oh my God,
insane.
Unbelievable.
So happy for
insane.
Her. Anyway,
no, it is amazing to see how well she's doing, and to watch her like touring around America and people going wild for, unbelievable.
You foreshadowed a story there where we were going to talk about an example of Irish culture being misappropriated, I think is the term that I would use. We need to talk about Charlie XCX.
Yeah. Now, the amount of coverage this got this week, I swear to God, I thought it actually happened this week.
Yeah.
I thought that this was literally something that had been on Lip Sync Stars or Lip Sync Battle. But no, so a 2018 clip of Charlie XCX lip syncing to the one and only Bewitched, C'est La Vie, has resurfaced. And she was in a battle against Rita Ora, you know, who seems to just get in everywhere. The controversy stems from the fact that the theme of the staging, and indeed the costuming of all of the backing dancers, was Union Jack, UK kind of Britpop-esque. And there was people literally during the like the dance break, during the like the Irish dance break, you had sort of dancers wearing Union Jack unitards flailing about the place.
Like Jerry Halliwell sort of style, yeah.
Full on Jerry Halliwell star. The staging also included Chrissy Teigen dressed up as the Queen of England, and other dancers dressed with the Queen's Guard in the background. So it was absolutely no mistaking the fact that they were claiming that this song is a British pop song, and they were leaning so far into it. Now, Irish Twitter has discovered it and are going absolutely wild with the fact that this is sort of the most repugnant form of misappropriation. Sort of, you know, after 800 years of repression and the Troubles, that now we have Charlie XCX, our favorite pop girly, dancing to our favorite song, adorned with all of the UK things. Unacceptable, unacceptable lip sync battle.
There are many things you can misappropriate, but Bewitched, no.
Yes, no, no.
How
no.
dare you? How dare you?
People were suggesting that one of the ways they could rectify this is maybe we're getting Harry Styles to sing Born in the USA, surrounded by sort of Canadian symbols, to do that. And of course, Derry Girls creator Lisa McGee and comedian Ashley B came out to comment on the controversy, saying that they had some notes and questioning the authenticity of the production's Irish-American perspective, which I just think is very, very funny.
Yeah, I mean, but I just, this is the internet. I love it that a clip from 6 years ago can surface and everyone can get really annoyed about it.
I know. I like, this is the kind of annoyed I like. Don't get annoyed at the lineup for Electric Picnic. Get annoyed at this.
Yeah, this is fun to be annoyed about.
Exactly.
Okay, moving on. Margot Robbie was a bridesmaid in her friend's wedding this week in Australia, which is not that interesting. But what I thought was interesting was the Daily Mail's slant on it, because the headline of their reporting on it is, "Would you want Barbie as your bridesmaid? Margot Robbie celebrates her best friend's wedding in her native Queensland." And I just, this like nonsense about women and weddings, it just drives me bananas.
Yeah, I read through it, and it's again, like, you know, the slant that the Daily Mail puts on pretty much everything, article ever written about a woman doing anything. Like, I think back to, was it the last time or the time before I was on, we were talking about the way they were talking about Kate Moss's birthday party. And it's just like with this like absolute sort of snarling distaste for women's existence and freedom to be themselves. So throughout the coverage, they said that the bride had, so Margot Robbie was, she was back in Queensland for her friend Britt Claxton's wedding. Apparently Britt, who got married, dubbed her this Barbie as a bridesmaid and seemed very happy with it. The Daily Mail, not so happy with it. They said that she had boldly chosen her to helm her best friend's bridal party, and noted that while she did not stand next to the bride at any point, Margot was seen beaming and giggling with her fellow bridesmaids. So this kind of trying to create this notion of like, don't outshine the bride, that the bride needs to be this bridezilla who's the most beautiful, perfect person in the world. And it kind of plays into, I don't know if you're TikTok ever brings up these kind of Karen-esque style, like, you know, stories of like brides going mega bride, usually kind of like the Am I the Asshole Reddit sort of retellings, where you'll often get these stories about like, my bridesmaid was so beautiful that I told her she needed to like shave her head and like, you know, wear a potato sack so that she'd be ugly standing next to me. And I'm like, do these people really exist? Because I looked in the comments of this on the Daily Mail to kind of get a sense for like what the people on the street were saying, and all of the comments were basically like, if I have a friend who's a good enough friend to me, I want them to be my bridesmaid regardless of how they look. I don't care if they're the most beautiful person in the world,
because
if
I love them
as a friend and I care about them. Exactly.
It's so crazy. And also to suggest that the shine could be taken off literally any bride on her wedding day. Like, if you are a bride, you are the star of the day. Like, 100%. People are looking at you and your partner, whether it's your wife or your husband or whoever, because they love you and because they're celebrating your love. Like, you know, the idea that you could be, just by being beautiful, you could take attention away from, you know, from the, that the wedding wouldn't be about the bride and groom or the bride and bride or whoever, I think is just nuts. And it's so outdated. And
it is.
It's like very Daily Mail.
It is 100%. It is a wedding, not America's Next Top Model. No one's getting voted off. And the bride is always going to be the center of attention, because that's who people will be focusing on. And people will be focusing on the relationship and the love, and they'll be crying because of the sentiments. So I do think it is just this sort of outdated sexism that the Daily Mail just threads in. Like, even when they were describing the dresses, they had to add in sort of, you know, unnecessary sort of context of like, oh, the bride's lithe body, she looked put on a leggy, and it's all of this sort of like wording that really should have gone out the way back in 2010 2011, but sort of hangs around in these sort of articles. One thing I did find funny when they, because they had to pad out this article with a lot of, you know, junk, because there wasn't really much to it, and they said that Margot Robbie left locals completely stunned as she was seen milling around local businesses as her on her trip back to Queensland. Locals were left stunned when they saw her walking around the local shops. It is just sort of like celebrity seen in public.
Yeah, but also how stunned are they if it's where she's from? Like, you know,
I can't imagine, you know,
they couldn't be that stunned. Anywho, there you go. Let's all just let people exist. Let's let women just exist. I mean,
let's let women exist.
What a wild suggestion. I thought it was worth flagging Conan O'Brien's cameo in Ross and Roon is on this week.
This is mad.
Were you aware of this? No,
I had seen, like, I wasn't aware of it in all truthfulness, but I had seen like a picture of what I realized now was this scene, and with no context or no understanding, I was like, what is going on here? So when I read through this, he was filming so Conan O'Brien was filming a HBO Max documentary here, a travel show called Conan Must Go, back in January. And while he was here, he filmed a cameo in Ross Naroon, T.G. Cahir's soap opera. And it's on at 8:30 some night this week. He played the delivery man delivering bar balloons to a bar, and he had one line of Gaelga, "Dig witch."
Yeah.
And then just sort of like walked out of the stage. But it is absolutely absolutely fantastic. He apparently expressed delight at working with the cast and crew, Ross Naroon, and apologized for any linguistic mishaps. But I've seen people commenting underneath the video to say his Irish was just fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen he got that. There's some fun videos around of him like on the set and speaking to the people in Ross Naroon in the production team, and it seems like they were having great crack and he was having a good time. But it's on tonight, I believe, as we're recording. It's Tuesday now, so I believe it's on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. However, there is an omnibus on Sunday evening if you want to see it, and it will be available on the TG Cahir and RT players, so no need to worry if you want to see Conan and Ross Naroon. That is a possibility. I love Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, he does seem really lovely. I like that. And I like that he's off doing his travel shows and doing his, you know, bits and pieces. Like, he seems like a genuinely lovely person. Good for him. And just to sort of see a random soap opera and be like, yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah, it's cool. He just seems very, like, you know, I am really struggling to find words, which is bad given my job. He seems very humble. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, all I could think of was not egotistical, and that's not the best way to describe that.
No.
Before I let you go, Ellen DeGeneres has been speaking out about her fall from grace.
Yeah. Now, I sent this on to you because I felt like it would be sort of interesting to chat about it, because there is this sort of this trying to reframe your narrative, and you see a lot of people do this when they've been cancelled. And Ellen is trying to come back now, and she was apparently during a night at her stand-up tour, she was joking about how she got kicked out of show business and made sort of some comments about how, like, oh, like, no one else is mean in show business. But she, like, I suppose it linked into my mind to the kind of Harvey Weinstein last year, where it's kind of like, these people are just like getting off the hook. It's like, it's not that you were mean, Ellen. It's that you sort of created a set where people were, you know, I think people were sexually assaulted. There were people were accusations of racism, creating like a toxic work environment, sexual misconduct, bullying, harassment. So that's not just, that goes beyond mean. You weren't kicked out of show business. You were, and then she tried to draw a comparison to sort of having her show cancelled back in 1997, the Ellen Show, when she came out as lesbian. And I'm like, don't you dare bring your like lesbianism down as a shield against the fact that you are actually an almighty C word. Because it's sort of this sort of trying to draw this link of like, oh, I am sort of, you know, so hard done by, and it is a comparison to be made between back in the very, you know, awful 90s when I was cancelled for being a lesbian, and this time when I was kicked off my show because I created a toxic work environment where literally hundreds of staff were telling stories about bullying and harassment and sexual misconduct. And I really just was like, no, Ellen, you don't get to come back. You are just a mean person. We saw that when you were outed by Dakota Johnson. We saw that when you were criticised for tone deaf comments around Justin Bieber, where he was sort of, remember, she was bullying Justin Bieber into like saying he was going to get his wife pregnant, and that kind of like trying to push him to say how many children he's going to have, and then sort of, you know, her like really awkward interviewing of Mariah Carey about like her miscarriage. Like, she has been a horrible person, and looking back now at her interviews, you can see she actually is very unkind, despite the fact that was her brand for the whole years. And I don't like this sort of trying to edge her way back in and reframe the narrative to sort of a position of like, oh, I was unfairly kicked out back then for being gay, and now I'm going to wrap this around me as a protection against the fact that I was cancelled for creating a toxic work environment.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there are lots of kind of former staff members who've come out and spoken and said, like, one former member of staff, this is from the time that everything was kicking off, said her happy persona was BS, that only happened when the cameras was on. Another said, because, you know, you can talk about a toxic work environment that might not be directly attributed to her, but these are specifically things that are attributed to her. Another claimed she fired people for attending family funerals or taking medical leave. And then one of her ex-employees called her one of the meanest people alive. But then there are people who've said, you know, that, you know, no, she is nice. Like, she's not. But, you know, look, no matter what happened, the situation with Ellen kind of having a fall from grace, for want of a better term, happened due to lots of complex issues, lots of very serious allegations, and not about her sexuality. Like, if her sexuality was going to be a part of it, then how did she have such a successful program for so long, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it just was sort of, I think, for me, the kind of trying to draw, like, having a standard routine where she draws direct comparisons between the two, for me, just felt very disingenuous, because obviously there was nothing, there was no element of that in 2020. She literally had received a Presidential Medal of Freedom of Barack Obama like a couple of years earlier. Like, you know, that was, you know, and it just is like, you know, some people don't need to have a comeback. I'm sure she's rich enough that she could just sit in her mansion in Beverly Hills for the rest of her life and live quite comfortably. Maybe we don't need the meanest person in show business back again.
Yeah, probably not. And I mean, aside from anything else, like, you had long enough, Ellen. Let someone else have a moment. It's Kelly Clarkson's
exactly.
turn.
Exactly. It is Kelly Clarkson's turn, no matter how much Drew Barrymore wants it to be hers.
Oh, actually, Drew Barrymore, I just saw this morning. Did you see she told Kamala Harris she needed to be Mamala for the whole nation?
I did. And Kamala Harris was like, no.
I keep thinking in my head that we all need a mom. I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
That is just the most tragic thing. I saw that this morning and I just, I wanted to die inside from cringe. The idea of saying to, like, also, like, the reality is, now, this is probably branching off into, like, too much of a tangent, but she would never make a name-based pun speaking to a male politician. You know, she would never do that speaking to someone.
Well,
who she
I don't know.
Speaking.
Drew Barrymore might. Like, I just don't know. I mean, Drew is just, she's something else. It's kind of I find her so fascinating. Like, I do genuinely believe, you know, all the stuff about Ellen, like, she's one person on stage and another person off stage.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the situation with Drew Barrymore. No. I think this is who she is. It is wild and weird and I think kind of wonderful. But Kelly Clarkson, I think, is the new queen of daytime television, and I'm delighted for her.
Yeah, absolutely. She is fantastic. A personality just explodes. We love it.
1,000,000%. Well, James, thank you so, so much. Where can the people find you? Aside
they
from in your new house.
Well, they can find me in and around the Glasnevin area. So you can come on over and have a listen to the radio show I do with Padraig Wilson McCarthy, Queeriosity, at Queeriosity Radio on Instagram, which will give you all of the direction that you need to come and listen to the show. Or if you want to just come and, like, I mean, you know, see videos of my new home that my interior design boyfriend will be making extremely beautiful, you can come over to James_O_Hagen and have a look at all of that there as well.
I love it. Well, congratulations. Congrats. Really delighted for you
guys. Thank
you
very much.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
The there you have it. That is the latest on the celebs this week. We will have another update on all of their antics next week, of course. In the meantime, don't forget that there is a new show that is coming on the 29th of May in the Laughter Lounge. The original one for the 9th of May is sold out, but we have announced another date, the 29th of May. So if you couldn't go to the 9th of May, or if you're not sick of me and you'd like to go to another show, you can obviously come too. It's going to be a different show. Those tickets are on sale now. Link is in the show notes. And of course, if you want extra content or just to support this podcast, all of your support is so gratefully received. I actually can't begin to tell you how much. The Patreon link is there as well. It's just patreon.com/catchupwithLouiseMacSharry. So there you have it, my friends. I will speak to you on Friday when I'll have another interview for you. In the meantime, I hope you have a lovely week. But if not, don't worry. They can't all be good. We'll just put one foot in front of the other. Thanks to Acast for having me. And thanks to James. And I will chat to you Friday.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.